And welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Brian Keller.
I'm Dan Fernandez.
Welcome back. Last week was kind of a busy week for you.
Yeah, we did our car thing. We got a couple more segments. We are now movie stars.
Yep.
TV stars,
TV stars, yeah.
Yeah,
People calling you out of the woodwork. You haven't talked to you since high school and
Seeing
how things are going.
Yeah. No.
No, not really?
No, not really.
Did your mom see it? What'd she think?
She thought it was great.
Awesome.
Actually, probably one of the funniest things is my mom started responding to some haters on some...
Some random new
article of
nice.
Like, Batman! So funny.
That's hilarious.
It turns out somebody doesn't like something on the internet.
That's hilarious.
Hilarious is what it is. Let's get into the news.
Getting into our top story. So this week I had the opportunity to help Jason Zander with his keynote down in Dev Connections. And the one thing he announced at the very end was a roadmap for our Visual Studio 11 Ultimate feature packs. So feature packs, you're probably familiar with feature packs from 2010.
These are subscriber benefits for MSDN subscribers.
You have to be an MSDN subscriber. So that's kind of the incentive to, you know, make sure that your boss buys you a subscription when you get your copy of Visual Studio and that you keep that current. But we're committing to providing regular incremental pieces of value on top of Visual Studio 11, which is cool. The first one of which is better unit testing and load testing support for SharePoint applications, as well as more targeted IntelliTrace data capture. So,
and those are feature packs, not something that's going to be in the product?
Right. So you'll have to have Visual Studio 11 Ultimate plus the feature pack in order to get it, or
Love
plus
it.
An MSDN subscription in order to get the feature pack. And so the idea with the SharePoint one is you can actually use the fakes capability now that's part of the unit testing framework.
Love me some fakes.
Love you some fakes. It's kind of like mocking or stubbing. Well, it is mocking, right? And the idea is that they're going to ship a number of SharePoint behaviors that make it easy for you to simulate a SharePoint farm so that you can unit test without actually having a SharePoint farm. And you do load testing and kind of do the same kind of thing. And then the IntelliTrace one, IntelliTrace by default captures just reams and reams of data. And it can have a kind of adverse performance effect on your application because of what it's capturing. And so by tweaking what's actually captured for IntelliTrace, they can actually reduce the footprint and then allow you to focus still on the variables and the method calls and stuff that you really care about for your app.
Cool. So. Now, one thing I have to say while you were talking about unit testing, one of my favorite features in VS11 mm-hmm. is the fact that you can now, there's built-in support for async in unit testing. Like before, you had to do these weird things where you're doing this wait stuff. And now, given how many Windows 8 applications are going to be using async code or task of something, mm-hmm. it's just built in. So, like, yeah, I have an API that it returns async stuff, and you can design your API to wait for that from a unit testing perspective. So it used to be, like, if you do a search for, hey, how do I write unit tests to do async code, there's a ton of different examples. Some of them didn't work, and a lot of them, you know, there were issues with Windows 8. It all just works.
See, I did not know
So there's a unit testing blog on that was just talking about the consumer preview.
Can I make that my pick of the week? Is it too late to change?
It's a little too late.
All right. All right, next time.
Which brings us to our next story.
This is big news.
Yeah, so this is Scott Guthrie announced on his blog that we are relying on MVC, the web API, Razor, and open as open source. So what that actually means is you can go to asp.net/webstack.codeplex.com, and the source code is there for anybody to reuse. Now, what's important is it's not just the source code for you to, you know, look at, peruse. Is they're actually going to be taking, say, commits from other people.
Right. So those community contributions, they have to be approved. They have to go through security reviews.
Sure. It's not just
stuff,
like,
right.
Brian Keller renamed all objects to be under bar and use Hungarian notation. They're not going to take it.
You mean it doesn't already use Hungarian?
It doesn't use Hungarian. You can look at the source code and see they do not use Hungarian.
Charles Simonyi is really, I would say, rolling over in his grave, but he's still alive. So
he stalks you.
Yes.
Okay. So... The other funny part, or the other thing to keep in mind, though, is in terms of what isn't in there, and that's ASP.NET Web Forms. Mm. And there's some issues. In fact, Scott Hanselman has a companion post here on this stuff in terms of some of the issues there, because these are parts that ship separately. ASP.NET Web Forms ships in the .NET framework, and, and there's issues there. And he kind of goes through the differences there. But even new stuff like the web API, it to me is really exciting. So
yeah,
it's cool that it's all open source, and we'll see what the community response is.
Yeah, and do you happen to know if someone does invest in writing some new code that passes security approval, do they get attribution as well?
I mean, attribution, it would probably have to depend on what form of attribution.
Like, this came like, from Brian
I
Keller.
Would assume, like, their commit, like, because it's their commit that they would go through, that it would show up
cool.
in the
It would be awesome to say that
build
you have
list.
Code that ships as part of some future ASP.NET.
Exactly. How's that for adding it to your resume?
I know, right?
Seriously.
Yeah, exactly.
We need to stop what we're doing. Okay. Which brings us to our next story.
Yeah, so another announcement that came out of, Tuesday's announces. So there were actually three keynotes here taking place on Tuesday. One was by Jason Zander and the third one by Brian Harry. And he announced that with the Team Foundation service, of course, TFS, built on the Windows Azure platform, we now have a build service available as well. And so prior to this, you could set up an on-premises build controller to handle builds for your hosted Team Foundation service. But now they now have a build service that's hosted in the cloud. It's Elastic, so you can spin up, you know, 1 or 100 builds, and it will handle them and then cycle those down. So that's really, really cool.
Yeah, I mean, the idea of, like, hey, for whatever reason, we need to compile the last 6 months of versions of our app.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how are we going to do this? Well, it'll take weeks for our machine to go through that. So, let's throw it on. Let's use it as a service.
Yeah, exactly.
So I love how many things are being exposed as services.
Yeah.
It's very cool.
Yep.
Windows Phone SDK 7.1.1 update now available.
I like to call it the 7.11 update.
Yeah, the old 7.11. Actually, Cliff does go into the numbering in case people actually are interested. So, a couple different things to keep in mind. Now, one big key is, I'd say there's two big features. One is the ability to support, finally, Windows 8 Consumer Preview, right? So there's been a number of issues, say, with the emulator and the tools. This roll-up now allows you to actually work on Windows 8 Consumer Preview, so you can actually have the emulator running applications. But there are a lot of people that were using Windows, that want to build Windows Phone applications and couldn't.
Okay.
Right. And now what they're saying is consumer preview support.
But you still have to use Visual Studio 2010 as the development environment?
No, it says Visual Studio 11.
Oh, wow. Awesome. Okay. I did not know that.
Yeah. So that's why I think it's probably cool and interesting, because a lot of us do demos on Windows Phone and Windows 8. And now you can get them all together.
I'm on Windows 9, but I understand some of you are still on Windows 8. Yeah. And then the other, of course, the big thing with the Phone SDK 7.11 is that it does support different form factors of devices. So this is going to allow them to produce cheaper devices and kind
this
of
this is the 250 yeah, yeah so that was the second megs. Thing I was going to say the 256 meg device versus the 512 meg device,
and I think also devices that maybe don't have accelerometers, if I'm not mistaken. You'll have to go back and check the details.
I don't remember seeing that one. But the advertising SDK used to be a separate download. It's now included in this.
Yep.
And there are some other things. But you can read Cliff's blog to get the whole detail.
Definitely.
But I think those are the big things. Supporting those other phones and being able to run on Windows 8 Consumer Preview. Now, that isn't supported because of, you know, we never support
Windows
things.
Windows 8's not supported. Right. Yeah, yet.
Right.
But, okay. Cool. So if you've used Visual Studio 11, you may have noticed that you can launch your applications now, as opposed to just using IE, you can choose which browser you want to render them in. And this is really helpful, especially if you're using some of the new page inspector tools that allow you to trace all the way back from, hey, show me this piece of CSS and why it was generated this way. It was from this particular code in my ASP.NET application. And you may have seen the default list of browsers that's included in Visual Studio 11. Well, obviously,
we're looking at them on the screen here.
We're looking at them on the screen there. So obviously, that list is going to grow over time. So when, you know, Dan Fernandez launches his danfernandezbrowser.com or the Hansel browser, if you will, how do you add that as a new browser in Visual Studio 11
over
time?
We're going to crush Hansel browser. I just want to
put that out there. And so this is just a post by Hanselman who takes you through how to extend that list.
Our browser is really just a meta browser. It lets any tab be any browser.
Wow, that's blown my mind.
Yeah, so it's like, you know what? This site renders better in Firefox, this one in Chrome, and I have to use Work for IE.
Yeah, actually, you might be onto something.
I said too much, didn't I?
Yeah, you did. God, we'll have to go back and edit that. Going on.
Hanselman, don't take this!
Windows Azure for the ASP.NET Developer Series.
All right, so this is a series that's just getting started by Peter Ladotti and a few other folks. And the idea is it gives you an overview of ASP.NET does the... All right, so why are we moving to the cloud? Why is this important? It talks about some of the differences between Windows Azure and Windows Server, mm-hmm. some of the things that you're going to have to keep in mind. And again, it starts pretty slow. So including things like, okay, there's a Windows Azure SDK. How do you get it started? How do you get your the setup? So
yep.
like Scott Guthrie talked about the new and improved experience for signing up for an Azure account.
Right.
But what are all the different knobs and switches that you want to turn on for your account? So,
right.
I'm doing table storage, I'm doing SQL, and so on.
Yep.
And then it really goes into actually taking applications and moving them over between both. So for people that are ASP.NET developers and just looking to get started on Azure, this is kind of like Azure for ASP.NET devs.
I love these series that focus on, hey, we already know that you're a developer. Exactly. I'm waiting on the Windows Azure for Lisp developers on AS400, but
Lisp?
Whatever. Yeah, I'll wait for that.
Oh, I thought you were making fun of my Lisp.
No. Metro, so, XAML, and HTML control samples.
I love control sample packs. Go.
Yes, this is awesome. So this is a pack of, I think, a few hundred, if I'm not mistaken, HTML and XAML control samples that you can download and kind of take through and learn from. So if there's a specific type of control that you want to use or develop, then you can use these as a starting point. They're all open source, and you can party on that.
So these are not different controls. These are sampling built-in controls, right?
I thought these were different codes control samples. Is that not what it says there on the screen there? Variety of code samples that exercise the various new programming models. Well.
Yeah, it's samples using the controls, so it's not new controls.
My bad. Okay.
So it's samples using controls.
Okay. I've lost control of this story.
Well, if there were samples of this story, no. I'm really worried you're going to take my idea, browser idea.
Metabrowser.com. I'm going to go register that while we're sitting here, and you cover the next story.
Activating Windows 8 contracts in your app. This is think about it as a blog designed to give you an update on what Windows 8 contracts are and how you can use them. So Windows 8 contracts being the examples of you are going to, for people who haven't used Windows 8, you're going to do a full screen search. And I feel like jumping out and actually doing some of these, but I'm worried like my email would jump up or something. the ability to have, say, I guess it's that side, would be there's a list of search providers,
right,
and be able to easily click through. And being able to say, for example, I have a share contract where that share contract, say, exposes, hey, you give me an image and I'll let you share to my thing. So Facebook can build one, Twitter can build one,
yep,
and so on. And you don't have to know the specifics and build a correct direct connection with those APIs. Somebody else has built it. It's really for inter-application communication,
right,
without those applications knowing the endpoints.
So I was talking...
SkyDrive is probably the great example that people should be checking out for consumer preview in terms of,
right,
the user experience
contracts
as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a by the way, metabrowser.com is already taken. Sorry. Hanselman, how does he do it? Anyway, I had an executive briefing with a company that makes really high-end devices for your living room or your corporate conference room that allow you to like change the channel or like book a conference room and that, mm-hmm, kind of thing. And we were talking about how they might be able to utilize contracts. So imagine being sitting at home on your couch and you are, you know, looking at Twitter and you see that Tim Tebow just went to the Jets, and then you type in Tebow and it shows you, hey, there's an interview with Tim Tebow on ESPN3. Let me take you straight to that. So you could, there's all sorts of really cool ways that you could use that and kind of
so
surface
sort
that
of
function.
Searching TV.
Yeah,
live
searching
TV,
searching news streams, searching like just a single place to search across all your applications and see exactly what's going on based on what the app knows. So if you had a channel changing app, then it would know that Tim Tebow is on channel 3 or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's
interesting.
Cool.
This is an article, and you know, I won't go into every single point, but for people who are, so I'm not super familiar with the deep details on the F# programming language. So it's kind of interesting that from the perspective as an author, knowing both F# and C#, and going back and forth between each, knowing like, hey, these are, when I'm in C sharp, I'm like, wow, I really wish it had this F sharp feature. One of the features is the option type. And what the option type is, the best example is kind of like nullable types.
Okay.
But it basically makes it so that you don't have to, it gives you compile time errors.
Okay.
Right? So like if you have something that is, you know, searching a string and it's going to return a thing, because reference types can be null, that, you know, if I'm setting string X to whatever the result of that search is, it could be null or it could be the result. And if I then try and print that out, maybe there's an error or because
I'm trying to... So it's like code contracts, kind of?
For this one in particular, it's just a nicer way to handle nulls.
Okay.
So, and some of the other ones are more like immutability, like there's built-in things. So in C#, the way you have to do this is, you know, I have a constructor and I take, you know... In their example, it's a point of like x, y, you pass it in, and then I had to specifically say it's read-only, private read-only, and then do the gets. It's just more code.
Okay.
Well, it's just much easier to expose that from a language perspective in F#.
Okay.
And a number of these different features.
Yep.
Cleaning up, doing some things similar to, say, var for implicit typing and so on.
Okay.
To make things more readable. But interesting for folks who aren't familiar with F#, to know some of the different language features available.
Right. Something I learned recently, if you want to use F# within a Metro style application, you can do that. So what you do is you first create a portable class library in F#, and then you can make that available from a C# XAML application or even probably an HTML5 JavaScript application.
But this, yeah, and so in this article, he talks about adding the F# runtime when you want, like, hey, if you really want these language features or you're doing a lot of, you know, whatever the particular task is, go ahead and add it, and you can have that support directly within C#.
Right, or J#.
No. Actually, he specifically...
Bringing it back. Okay, so speaking of J#, speaking of SSDT, so you probably remember the database professional tool, DataDew, that allowed you to kind
Love
of do
it.
Version control, schema compare, data compare. Well, that's no longer part of the Visual Studio family because the SQL Server team took a look at what we did in Visual Studio and they said, we've got to have kind of one of our core
I love it.
Around SQL Server. So now they've taken that functionality, they've turned it into what's called SQL Server Database Tools. And this article just talks about how you can take advantage of the schema compare because oftentimes what happens is, you know, let's say you have a production database and you create a staging database or a development test database based on kind of a backup of that production database, and they're exactly the same on day one, but then occasionally you have to like hot fix a change to production and now your staging environment no longer looks like it, so you need to compare the two to figure out what the differences are. Schema compare lets you do that and generate the scripts that you need in order to make one look like the other. So it's just a really great tool that anybody working with databases is going to need.
When you need to do those updates.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
want to see the diffs.
Exactly.
So this is a super cool story. It's a community effort by Jamie Thompson, who started thinking about, since everybody uses AdventureWorks 2012, the idea of providing a read-only version of AdventureWorks on SQL Azure. So... the community actually went ahead and did it. You know, they are looking for like PayPal because I think it's like $100 for the year. But you can basically get the credentials and have a hosted version of AdventureWorks 2012.
That's awesome.
I think it's awesome. I totally think it's awesome.
Yeah, and it's actually now that they've done it, it's like, oh, why didn't we think of that?
Yeah, exactly. Just have hosted demos.
Yep,
so.
Exactly.
Prashant actually had, well, starter data. That's a separate story I'll get into later. Go.
So our friend Nick Harris, friend of the show, this is in our flashback series, taking a look at a lot of really great talks that came out of Tech Days a few months ago. And Nick Harris did one where he talks about how to use Windows Azure, not just from Windows Phone, but from iOS and Android and Windows 8 as well. So I love Nick's presentation style. He's a funny guy, but he also really knows his stuff too. So if you're looking to do any of that kind of cloud development for those devices, definitely check this one out.
Cool.
Yeah.
That brings us to
Picks of the Week. So my pick of the week, Dan Delamarsky.
Friend of the show. Coding
friend
for
of
fun
coding
author.
For fun, everything else. So he wrote an achievements viewer for Windows Phone, and this is a view at taking that Visual Studio achievements viewer from Windows Phone over to Windows 8. So really, really cool and very practical, even though, you know, not many of us are going to be building Visual Studio Achievements applications. Many of us may have Windows Phone applications that we want to move over to Windows 8. So nice job done, and really great to see his content.
Yeah, I love it.
You start talking, and I'll do the switch.
Switch.
Okay, switch.
All right. Oh, thank you. Yes. My pick of the week is Make Mayhem. That was so awkward. MakeMayhem.com is a project that had started out in the Applied Sciences group in Microsoft Research, and they've made it open source. The idea behind Mayhem is this. So, and you can watch the tutorial video, but it's the idea is you want to be able to connect anything to anything.
Okay.
So somebody builds a, you want to call it a domain-specific library or whatever you want to do. So
okay.
Some wrapper that conforms to their thing that exposes their features, like an Xbox controller that
okay.
has a button, up, down, left, right, trigger, how hard the trigger is pressed, and so on.
Okay.
And then somebody else has built something that is a way to control Office. So
okay.
open a new Word document or a PowerPoint slide controller. Move back a slide, full screen.
Yep.
Move right a slide, and so on, right?
Got
so
it.
All the things that you'd want to be able to control them. This allows you to control anything to anything, right? So not being a programmer, you can then visually say when somebody clicks on button A on that Xbox controller, go to the next slide. If you hit button B, then go to the previous slide. And it's all visual. It's a visual environment where you're basically doing events. When somebody presses this, do that.
So it's like a centralized delegates model, eventing model across all these different interfaces.
Yeah, exactly. That allows you to connect things. So, you know, you can do the same thing with, because there's a way to do it on Windows Phone.
Mm-hmm.
So now you can use Windows Phone when I click this button, then go to the next slide. When I click this button, go to the next slide. And use it for anything. When I, you know, click the button, press play the latest music or so on.
Right.
So it's really just designed to sort of be open-ended way. They do have a contest going on right now, and there's a lot of different add-ons going on. And I think the other area that may be interesting is, because I think the model is really designed for somebody that's not a programmer to do this eventing,
mm-hmm.
but they do have a .NET API as well.
Hmm.
So like being able to think about that, because I think, you know, if somebody builds a lot of these cool APIs,
yep.
rather than me having to learn the entire PowerPoint API and SDK to have just the most common things.
Right.
Next slide,
Quick
previous
start.
Slide.
Yeah.
Same thing with Xbox buttons.
So this is Make Mayhem from our friends Phil Terone and company over at Make Magazine?
No.
Oh, it's just different names.
No,
okay.
Applied Sciences Group at MSR started it and then released it. That was
Got
the
it.
First part that I explained that I think you were checking email.
Yeah, I was registering metabrowser.net.
Damn it.
Yes. All right. Well, we'll see you next week when Dan will have a beta release of metabrowser.net ready for you to download.
Thanks.
See you next week. Right.